This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
And welcome back to yet another episode of Week in Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Anna Hastert, your host this week, joined by Dustin Hoffman. Dustin, good to have you back this week.
Well, thank you very much.
And so we had a couple of things happening here this week in regards to news. On Thursday, of course, the big one was the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report for corn. This was viewed as disappointing. There was a really good ending stock number that came out on the quarterly grain stocks report about a week prior. And so analysts were looking for another bullish shot in the arm when it came to corn, although USDA lowered exports and ethanol, bringing ending stocks to 1.929 billion bushels. That's about 145 million bushels higher than that trade was expecting. For soybeans, it looked a little bit better. There was a drop in yield by one bushel, bringing it to 46.9 BPA, and ending stocks were also decreased, bringing them to 460 million, which was a big move because a couple months ago, we were looking at 1 billion for an ending stock for soy. Dustin, let's talk about some of the things you covered this week.
Yeah, on Wednesday, Vice President Mike Pence came to Waukee, and he was joined by Senators Ernst and Grassley, as well as Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, and they talked about and made a push for the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. The crowd was there. They heard a roundtable discussion as well from Matt Deppe, who is the CEO of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, members of the County Farm Bureaus, also with Iowa Pork, and even Steve Sukup from Sukup Manufacturing was there as well, talking about the benefits of USMCA for the agriculture industry in different facets of the agriculture industry as we look at it. And again, the message was to the people there that they need to call their elected representation and also make their voice is heard, also even to the leadership of Congress to make sure their voice is heard there as well, because you have that right as an American citizen. If you want to see that passed, you should go ahead and make your voice heard, because others are going to make their voice heard as well.
Yeah, and Dustin, on Tuesday, I was able to visit with some farmers who were hitting the fields before the rain and frost came in over the weekend. So let's kick it over to my segment to hear from a couple different farmers about where they're at in regards to harvest progress. The Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network staff anticipates a dynamic crop progress and conditions report on Monday. A fair amount of farmers were able to get into fields Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, while Mother Nature permitted. I visited with a couple farmers before they headed into fields on Tuesday. Steve Anderson of Beeman, Iowa, planned to continue soybean harvest. He and his crew were making final adjustments to equipment when I pulled into the yard. Anderson speaks to the results he is yielding from his fields, thanks in part to cover crops.
Steve, we were talking about some of the challenges that we've been experiencing so far this harvest season. Let's just talk about where you stand in regards to harvest.
Well, we've put a dent in the soybean harvest. We've got about 20% of them out, but it's been a struggle, as everyone knows. They've been a little wet coming out of the field, but we've been binning them in order to keep harvest going and then running air.
You have some seed corn fields that are being harvested today. Let's talk about seed corn harvest and your plans for cover crops afterwards.
Okay, well, we've got about half the seed harvested and the other half is going to get harvested today, so that's good. Because of the fall that we've been struggling through, it's been pretty wet out in the field. So what I've done so far, just to speed things up, I've had the co-op spread rye along with some potash out in the fields in order to get that going, and then we ran our vertical tillage tool across it to incorporate it, and we got that done just before some nice rains.
For those farmers who don't implement cover crops on their fields after harvest, let's just talk about how you make it all work. You have seed corn fields being harvested, you're putting cover crops on them almost right after, and you also have commercial crops that are being harvested. How do you make all of this work, and how do you get all of it done before the end of fall?
You know, I've learned to improvise and rely on hired help and custom applicators to help me out getting some of the product on, just because when times are like this, we don't have spare time when the weather's fit to do anything but harvest pretty much. And so I've relied on, like I said, the custom applicator to apply it. And we flew on about 350 acres onto some commercial corn too.
Yeah, and let's talk about the results that you're excited to see from those fields that you've had cover crops on previously.
You know, we've experienced some pretty good yields so far. I mean, they're not what they were the last few years, but for the year that we've been through, I think they're probably at least as good, if not better, than what I expected. Nothing to brag about by any means, but things have been challenging, to say the least. We've planted some into standing green, and we've harvested some of that already, and it turned out just fine. In fact, I was really impressed with the stand. I was surprised. It worked out pretty good.
Yeah, and let's just talk about how well that held up, especially when we had a heavy rainfall throughout the growing season.
I think some of the things that helped us was the root growth of the cover crop. You know, after last fall's harvest, the ground was really hard. And I did notice in newly acquired ground versus ground that I would already had and had cover crops on that the stand in the soybean fields weren't nearly as good where we didn't have cover crop versus where we did. And I'm really believing that the root action loosening up the soil probably helped some of that soybean stand to come along.
All right, Steve, well, that's all the questions I had for you today. Anything else you'd like to say about fall harvest or your cover crops?
You know, every day that I see cover crops, the more I believe in them. You see little things, you know, it's not great big things that you see, but little things that add up that make you know that it's the right thing to do.
Adam Nekonecki of Buckingham, Iowa, harvested seed corn across the road. Nekonecki says harvest crews have been mudding up fields in an effort to get the crop out before the imminent frost. He also speaks to harvest on his operation in Tama County.
Adam, you are here helping with seed corn harvest. Let's just talk about what you've been doing the last month in this regard.
You know, for the last month, been helping with seed corn harvest. We're picking for the Grinnell plant for Monsanto or Bayer, and been running around Conrad, Beeman, down by Grinnell, and up by Rhinebeck. So getting around pretty good, but weather's been rough with the rain, and it's been wet and muddy, but we've been kind of pushing through it, good or bad, mudding stuff out, but trying to get the acres covered because they're talking a pretty good frost this weekend.
And you said you've been in this area for about a month now. Are you seeing a lot of cover crops being applied post-seed corn harvest?
I haven't seen much with seed corn. I know a few fields. I know this is one that you can see on the end rows that cover crops were put on. I haven't really seen much of anything in field yet. I know a lot of stuff's been aerial applied lately. I think that's done now, but I was trying to get mine done as well. There was the end of September.
Yeah, and let's just talk about where you're at in regards to harvest at your home operation.
We haven't started anything yet. Still working on getting equipment ready. Been doing seed corn harvest, so trying to get stuff ready. We've got seed beans that I don't think are ready to go yet. They've got probably another week or so, but I've got corn. That's some of that 60-inch corn. That was some really short season, 97-day corn. I think that would go, and I'd like to get that off so we can get cows turned out, but a lot of the corn's really drying out pretty good for me, so hopefully it'll be dried down, not paying too much in drying cost.
If I remember right, in those 60-inch rows, you have cover crops in that field, and you plan to turn your cows out onto those, right?
Correct. Yeah, we did basically two rows of 30, 60-inch gap and alternate all the way across the field and seeded the cover crops in about V5. And yeah, I'm anxious to get that combined and get the cows turned out because the pasture's starting to wear down to nothing.
And what are your plans in regards to cover crops here this fall?
Most of my acres I ended up aerial plying. I've had a fun summer. I had shoulder surgery in June, so I haven't done anything really. I mean, physically couldn't do anything. So I ended up having to have a bunch of my acres aerial applied just to get something on with this weather. I had pretty good weather with the rain, good moisture to get it going. And then some of the acres I didn't do, I'm going to come back after. Those are the soybean acres. I'm going to come back and just drill them in.
Anything new you're going to do this year?
No, not this fall. It's just one of those, I'm just trying to get something out, get done what I can with the weather, yeah.
Are you nervous about this year's harvest? Excited? What are you kind of feeling right now? You're getting close.
I'm looking forward to see how things yield. I know it won't be as good as last year, but I kind of hope it's better than what I expect. But we'll see. With the year it was, and then this summer with the struggle of getting side dress done in a timely manner with my shoulder surgery and stuff, that we'll see how it turns out. But I think it ought to be pretty decent.
All right, Adam, that's all the questions I had. Anything else you'd like to add today?
No, I just hope, you know, everybody has a good and safe harvest, and hopefully it turns out pretty well. Hopefully the weather will cooperate.
Anderson and Nekonecki participate in the Iowa Seed Corn Cover Crop Initiative, a project developed by the Iowa Seed Association. The project looks to increase cover crop adoption, specifically within Iowa seed corn production system. Cost share assistance is provided to growers planting cover crops and seed corn acres only, thanks in part to the Iowa Department of Agriculture's Clean Water Initiative program. For more information about the program, visit sustainableseedcorn.org. I'm Anna Hostert with this segment for Weekend Ag Matters. Stay tuned for more news.
Having an edge in agriculture isn't just about producing more, it's about returning more. And that's why more producers are using Magnify, the financial management software from Farm Credit Services of America. Magnify delivers a better view of your business to help manage your operation. Today, there are enough unknowns in agriculture without your cost of production being one of them. Learn more about Magnify by visiting fcsamerica.com/magnify.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Last week, the EPA and the Trump administration released a plan to fix the issues we've had with the renewable fuel standard, especially in regards to small refinery exemptions. Iowa Farmers Union President Aaron Lehman reminds us while we should be grateful to get this announcement, we need to remember this is only the first step on a path to getting us back to where we already were. Thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to be talking today about fuel policy and things like that. And as we start out, we're after Friday, we had some big changes come. We had the big announcement come from the administration. We were planning to talk about the renewable fuel standard, but we did get some news, and that's where I think we should start with today.
Absolutely. We are pleased that the administration is moving towards replacing some of the gallons that were taken away from the waivers that were issued, and we're moving towards rulemaking to replace those gallons back into the ethanol market.
The question I guess I have, and this is what's been bothering me through this whole, since they talked about coming to an agreement, and I'm not saying bother me, but made me question the whole thing. You know, we're trying to find an agreement where the gallons can be brought back, but isn't that the whole point of the renewable fuel standard, is if there's a waiver granted, they're supposed to reallocate the gallon somewhere else?
Yeah, very clearly the renewable fuel standard was supposed to take this into account. And so getting the integrity back into the renewable fuel standard and how it's being implemented is extremely important. And while we're trying to replace those gallons that were lost, it largely puts us back to where we were. Rather than moving forward with the renewable fuel standard and getting us to the next issues that we need to as an industry to make some real differences that we will see on the farm.
And let's talk about those for a few minutes. What are those things? You know, like you said, we're trying to get back to a normal, but we were also looking at beyond. And what kind of things is the Iowa Farmers Union looking at and supporting in the message they're trying to get out to help grow this beyond the catch-up we're playing right now?
Yeah, right now we're just playing catch-up. We've got a long ways to go for us to get to where we need to be, where we have a renewable fuel standard that encourages us to get to those higher level blends of ethanol and gets us to the point where we're providing the support we need for the next generation of renewable fuels. And it's impossible to get to those goals while we're constantly trying to play catch up. And we're not sure we're all caught up yet either. It's progress that we're seeing with the announcement made on Friday, but we know that our folks who represent the fossil fuel industry are already disputing the actions that were taken on Friday and have vowed to carry this fight as far as they possibly can, rather than abiding by what we feel is a very clear renewable fuel standard.
And this whole situation that we got ourselves into definitely did some damage to Iowa in two fronts, and that would be the refiners of the biofuels, because Iowa leads the nation in production of ethanol, but it also affects the farmers who are producing the corn and are producing the soybeans for biodiesel as well. It's been a two-prong attack on part of Iowa's economy. And let's talk first about the refineries and the stress that they've been under.
Yeah, our refiners are under extreme pressure. Some have closed, virtually all are shutting production down, if not completely, they're removing production. Their employees are facing all sorts of uncertainty from just being sent home or having facilities completely shut down altogether for good, as best as we can tell. So, yes, it has a huge impact on our rural Iowa economy. Until we get some real certainty with what's going on, I think we're all kind of in a little bit of a wait and see mode of whether we can follow through with these agreements.
And now the Iowa farmers as well, that they're the ones that have really taken this on the chin in this whole situation. I mean, it's affecting demand in a situation in a time right now where we're producing a lot of corn. We're good at what we do, and these farmers should be proud of that fact. But they're also the same token where we have stress in the trade markets. We have stress in just the markets here domestically. And now you're looking at another, there was another cut to their supply line, or their demand line, I should say, and to where they can send their corn. I mean, it's really been hard on them, and all this is kind of pressing down on them as well.
Oh, absolutely. Before we had this summer's debacle regarding the renewable fuel standard and the waivers granted, before that, Iowa farmers, the farm income was down 50% from our more recent highs. And everyone was already tightening their belt. They were already talking to their creditors, to their landlords, trying to find ways to make ends meet. The timing was awful for this to happen. Any gains that we were hoping to get by opening E15 markets were blown away by the granting of these waivers, and we're still picking up the pieces from that uncertainty.
And even with getting this agreement done, and let's say it gets done on paper the way it was, like you said earlier, it brings us back to where we were, not where we wanted to go. Is this going to at least be somewhat of a help, or how long is this going to take? I mean, we have some refineries I've talked to and say, hey, we're just waiting for something, and then we're going to get back online. We're paying our employees. You know, we're keeping it together. Some haven't been that lucky, but this is going to be a dent that's going to take a while to recover from, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And there's... while we go into this process hoping that we get there, but we know that following through on this commitment is not a done deal. It's far from a done deal. And in fact, even getting through to this point only gets us back to where we were. It doesn't get us to where we need to be as an industry.
And right now, the next step in this agreement is for EPA to make a rule, and then it opens up a comment period about it, correct?
Absolutely. The comment period will be extremely important. We know that we'll be ready to make comments and help set the table for it. But we also have seen that the vows of the other side of the industry have made very clear that they are not ready to go along with this action. So it's far from a done deal.
And this is, I guess, where I am coming back to where I started with earlier. You know, we're talking about making a law, a rule, to follow a law as it was written. And Senator Grassley made the comment earlier a couple of weeks ago saying, you know, we're trying to find ground that's good for the biofuels industry but good for the oil industry. And he goes, we already had that. It was called the Renewable Fuel Standard.
Yeah, this is just to follow through on what is already in the law, and so it's very discouraging that we've had to go back and rework this ground that should have been ready, and it leads us to really wonder what the true commitment is going forward. I'm glad this announcement was made, and yes, it's the step in the right direction we need, but it is far from getting us to a place where we're confident that the law is going to be followed.
And so what we need to do is, you know, and I'm sure this is something that you have gotten out to your members, Iowa Farmers Union, you know, a grassroots organization, you know, true to its members. And getting that ball rolling is one thing, but keeping the momentum going is another. And that's where farmers, citizens, refiners, people who are touched by this from all walks of life can be involved in helping keep this ball rolling.
Absolutely. Everyone will need to be involved to follow up to make sure that we are going to follow the law as we write rules here. This is not the time for us to relax and say it's all going to be good, it's all going to be restored. We are not there yet.
That again was Iowa Farmers Union President Aaron Lehman. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters right after the break.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
In the course of my lifetime, I can say that our demeanor toward each other has declined in politeness and respect. Each time I see a public display of rude behavior and disparaging remarks, it makes me want to go back to a time when words and emotions were kept in check. I realize the fires inside of us have always been the same, but I can't say I find the increasing level of verbal attack is beneficial to maintaining society. Politics has always been a place where rude behavior comes forth, but the decorum of current candidates is truly amazing and has plunged to new lows in a country that once considered itself to be civilized. I believe the actions of politicians are an extension of our demeanor and our values. But this cycle has flown so far out of control that there doesn't appear to be any hope for turning the situation back toward respectable exchanges. I'm a fan of a PBS television series of a few years ago called Downton Abbey. It was set in an unbelievably fine home of the 19th century, and then the storyline picks up in 1912 and carries through the late 1920s. The British aristocracy at that time are living the finery of their glory years, even though the world around them is changing. They struggle with the realities of World War I and the invention of modern conveniences such as the electric light, the telephone, and phonograph. Still, the Crawley family have a butler and a full household staff who live and work downstairs, while the lord, lady, and daughters live in the beautifully appointed surroundings of the estate, with their every need cared for by their servants. The public demeanor toward each other is quite refined and beckons back to an era of strict rules of etiquette and social engagement. It may have taken centuries to build the British Empire, but they knew how to live well by wielding their wealth and position. However, the inner struggles of the Abbey make up the real story. The historically accurate dialogue for this dying lifestyle is written by Julian Fellowes, and the treachery of the elite is no less complex and brutal than our indiscretions of today. The willingness of one to sell out another is offset by good and kind behavior, only to then go down another path that surely would make one blush if we witnessed similar activity in our modern homes and institutions. The series addresses criminal behavior, homosexual activity, racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, and class warfare in a most provocative way. My conclusion, based on history read and docudramas viewed, is humans have always been the same under the skin, but our ancestors viewed decorum as a means to maintain the status quo in social, business, and political circles. Today, we've tossed all that away and determined televised mud wrestling to be the best approach to gaining fame and fortune. Is what we are viewing in Washington a sign of the downfall of our nation? Many people I know hope that's true, but only after they die. It's funny to contemplate why someone who has lived a long life, prospered under our form of democracy, and witnessed the evolution of American society would want to see it self-destruct just to prove their criticism is right. Media is now blamed for pretty much everything, but it does telescope human interaction and creates an epidemic of behavior changes. An example is every boy wanting to grow his hair long like Elvis Presley or the Beatles in the 50s and 60s. Today, most want to be tattooed from head to toe, and tomorrow there'll be something that starts somewhere and ends up everywhere in a matter of minutes. We are now like the universe, expanding and changing at an increased rate of speed. Back to our world and the little towns that dot the prairie. The oldest living generation knows how to be polite and usually conduct themselves in a proper manner. Those who defied the casualness of modern society passed the social graces on to their children and even influenced their millennium grandchildren. Newly responsible parents of today are teaching their children social reality that equates to the golden rule of relationships. I like to hear people who are plain spoken, but I hate to see them resort to vulgarity because they don't have better words in their vocabulary to express their point of view. There is still hope. Americans will demand accountability in how we play our business, social, and political games, rather than just the objective of winning at all costs. For Weekend Ag Matters, I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken, and that's all for this edition of Weekend Ag Matters. We thank you for tuning in with us here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You can find replays of this show as well as all of our other content online at iowaagnet.com. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Facebook at Iowa Ag Radio. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on Weekend Ag Matters.